it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Ayo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox post-game show. Coming to you live from Studio B of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at EckermAll23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. We'll be joined later on from Guaranteed Rate Field by our CHGO White Sox beat writer, Vinny Juber, from being produced today by our good pal Joey. Doesn't have a mic on, but he says hi to all of you. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe. Thank you, Joey. Hit that subscribe button. We are here. We're CHGO Sports. We're here to serve you, the Chicago sports fans. We got shows covering the Blackhawks weekly. We got shows covering the Bulls weekly, Bears weekly, and Cub shows going on in A right now. We're going on in B right now. So make sure you're not missing out on any of the great CHGO Sports content. Joey, why don't we ask Kevin Pillar what FAST means?
You know, FAST was an acronym for something.
Yep, for something. We don't know what it was. White Sox are now 6-23. They lose to the Minnesota Twins 3-2. Herb, we both called losses in the pregame, not because we're trying to hate on this team, but just because it doesn't seem like they can get it done. And here's another one-run loss today.
I mean, they almost have four times as many losses as they wins, so it's not, you know, a hard thing to do that. But firstly, about that Kevin Pillar, is that from foul territory?
Yes.
Okay. He joined foul territory right when he was getting cut by the White Sox on Friday?
2 hours before.
Amazing.
And the VOD says, Kevin Pillar interview before DFA'd.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was fairly, like, at least from Pillar's standpoint, it was fairly positive from the White Sox. They were pretty clear with him on his role. I don't think that he felt like he was able to be the leader that he could have been. There were several moments where he said, oh, wait to put it off. Like, there's things that I could say, but I kind of want to see if the guys step up. I think that's the one thing, and we'll talk to Vinny about this later. Doesn't seem like Tommy Pham's waiting to do that.
No.
Seems like Tommy Pham's like, all right, you fuckers are doing shit wrong. Let's get this straight. And sorry, I know some people listen to this with their kids, so maybe I shouldn't be dropping F-bombs and S-bombs. But
your kids hear him anyways.
Yeah, your kids will hear him anyways. But I don't know. Just this is a team that always seems to be close but no cigar.
Yeah, it was a well-pitched game by the White Sox. They executed the game plan. When Garrett Crochet is out there throwing BBs 99 mile per hour right down the middle. Like his last pitch, I think it was versus either Santana or, I don't know, one of the Castro. He's like, okay, good. Here's a fastball down the middle, 99. Do your damnedest. And with the Minnesota Twins being so good at hitting fastballs, that's really brave. But Garrett Crochet has that F you, I don't care type of mentality today, and he was on his game. So I have no qualms about the White Sox losing this game. I mean, it's a 3-2 game. The qualm I would have is the lack of offense, but this is the lack of offense that we have seen for most of the 2024 season. So me harping on it would be just more of the same that I've already done. But they had a game plan early, and it seemed like either the Twins adjusted and or the White Sox went away from that game plan versus Joe Ryan. And so it's a tough pitcher that they really have never had success against in Joe Ryan. And speaking of Kevin Pillar, the last time he hit a home run was versus Joe Ryan here at Minnesota last week. But as losses go, of the 23 losses that they've had, this is not even in the top 15 of how angry I am about the loss. Yeah, not scoring runs is a common theme, but I thought they had played pretty well and just, you know, throwing to Byron Buxton with the ninth inning. I mean, what can you do? You have to pitch to him. Like, if you walk him there, he's stealing second, and then you get the RBI single from Kepler anyway. So what can you do?
What's the worst loss then?
The worst loss?
What loss has made you most angry?
Who?
Out of the 23.
What was the one where they're up? No, the last week where you had Eric Fetty go up and shove in Minneapolis.
The 23rd?
Yeah. and then they just give up the booty late in that game.
And lose 6-5 on a walk-off?
Yeah.
I was going to say the Cleveland loss, where they had the lead and then lose 7-6, where Brian Shaw ends up, I think, pitching his last game with the White Sox and gives up the lead there. And then I also would throw in either the 11-1 ass-whooping by the Reds on that Friday night where Ellie De La Cruz went off, or the Friday where Spencer Turnbull almost no-hit them.
Yeah.
Like, I think those well, maybe they didn't get me the most mad, but those are probably the most depressing.
Yeah.
This one isn't depressing. It's just what we expect from this team. The White Sox are now 3-7 in one-run games, 22-37 under Pedro Grifol in one-run games.
It's just like you waste another great effort from your starting pitcher. Last week was Fetty. You think he leads the game. You're up in that ninth inning, 5-4. You have to pitch to Byron Buxton. It's the same situation. You have to pitch to Byron Buxton. In that game, he hits the home run solo shot off of Steven Wilson, who before that game had really given up nothing. And then they eventually lose that game. And then same thing today. You're tied 2-2 in the ninth inning, top of the ninth. You got to pitch to Byron Buxton. I didn't think it was a bad pitch. It was just a looping either curve or slider that Brebbia threw. And Byron Buxton went down and got it. So he's the White Sox, you know, nemesis. He's the White Sox Achilles heel. And as somebody put in the Discord, Byron Buxton is inevitable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we had a comment on that game, that post-game show where Byron hit that homer that ended up putting them up, and there was the discussion, you know, would you pitch to him or, you know, I forget the other option there at this point because they all blur together. But someone was like, oh, I would, of course I'm pitching to Byron Buxton. Like, he's one of the worst hitters in the league. Like, he's been, looking at just OPS plus, he's been below league average over the past 2 years. However, Sox fans know the damage that guy can do. And it did seem like you're absolutely right. He was waiting fastball, but he just has such athleticism where he's able to stay balanced, wait back on that slider, and still pull it down the line for a double. I mean, he's just a clutch hitter, a fantastic talent. Mm-hmm. And the White Sox, if we're just comparing these two teams straight up, they have their healthy star center fielder. The White Sox don't. And obviously that's not the decider in this game. But maybe it is the decider in this game because he scores the game-winning run.
Yeah. I think, too, the Twins are just a hard team for most teams, or especially the White Sox, to prepare for. Like, today, Garrett Crochet is a lefty. He's throwing against all righties, pretty much, exclusive righties. And many teams can't do that. And it's not like they're falling off the table with those righties in their lineup. And then once Garrett Crochet leaves the game, you see Max Kepler go in the game. You see Kirilloff come in the game. You see Edward Julian come in the game. They just have a full roster that they can beat you with multiple people, even the bench. And Rocco Baldelli, while I've been not a fan of his as far as how he manages the Twins, he has the people now to do exactly what he wants. And he's not even working with a full deck where Royce Lewis comes back. And then you're really in trouble. This is the White Sox fifth loss this year to the Minnesota Twins, I think 6th loss in a row to the Twins, and 12th of the last 13 games. They just don't have any answers for them, and I know specifically the AL Central, they've been getting dominated, but the Twins specifically have been dominating the White Sox as long as probably since 2017, as I said in the pregame series. The season series is since 2017, the White Sox have only won one, and that was in 2021 where they won the AL Central. That's probably the key for the White Sox winning divisions is beating the Twins specifically.
Yeah, and Aiden says, not a bad loss if you ask me. Hopefully they take the series. Hopefully. I'm not sure if that's going to end up happening, but I think the biggest thing comes down to the eighth, at least for the Sox. Corey Lee gets on against Thielbar, and then Vaughn pops out weakly to the second baseman. Sheets gets a walk, so then you end up having first and, well, then I miss Benny striking out.
Well, you missed the, Corey Lee got the single. Yes. Then they bunt with
that's
Nicky Lopez.
Yeah, sack bunt, right?
Yeah. Like, you know my thoughts on sack bunting. It's not smart. I know they only need one run there, or they're only going for one run. But as the Tango chart always proves out, Tom Tango, that bunting and giving up outs is less good for your team than actually just hitting away and trying to do some damage that way. Like, a productive out is good with me. Giving up an out, especially when a guy just gave up a leadoff single, where he's kind of maybe like miffed that he gave up a leadoff single to the nine hitter and Corey Lee, I would have loved for they just go with Nicky Lopez, a guy who has decent enough speed to maybe beat out a double play. But I would have welcomed a double play. At least you're going for it. I think bunting just pretty much gives up the at bat and also shows the team like, hey, we don't trust this guy to hit, even though he's our leadoff hitter.
Well, and two, there isn't really a move for Lopez, and he's your leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
Like, the guy that's getting the most at-bats, no offense to Nicky Lopez, been on the show, and he was great and a very affable person.
Very much so. Love him.
But he's just not a leadoff hitter. He's not a major league leadoff hitter. Lee gets on with the single. You're right. No outs for the Sox. He was the leadoff in that eighth inning. It's still a 2-2 game. Lopez sacks bunts and then moves Lee over to second base. And then Vaughn pops out to the second baseman. Sheets walks, and then Aloy strikes out. So there's the three outs there, Lopez, Vaughn, and then Aloy. My bad on setting that up. But first and third there when Sheets ends up going to the plate, right?
At the end of the game?
Or in the eighth? Oh, because then they got first and third in the ninth.
Yeah.
Now I'm all confused. All right. No. My bad. Then let's go to the ninth. In the ninth inning, Benny gets out. Then Mendick walks. Then Tommy Pham pinch hits. He lines out to left field. Grossman pinch hits, and he gets a single. Then Shoemake pinch runs for him. But then Corey Lee comes up in the ninth inning and then strikes out. It's just frustrating because you mentioned the White Sox hitting approach against Joe Ryan was decent to start the game, and then it ended up falling apart for them.
And yeah, Jared, Yes, I would welcome the double play. That would mean that they were trying to get hits instead of giving up an out. Like, yeah, it's bad that the result is bad, but the process of you trying to get a hit and it happened to just be a double play, hey, man, sometimes that happens.
The Sox are in a weird issue, too, just because even if you want the sack bunt there and you're fine with giving up an out, you have a lefty on the bump, and Lopez, one of your weaker hitters, who's getting another extra at-bat, there's no righty on the bench to take him out, though, right? Because there's no more Sosa. You have Martin Maldonado, and you had, I guess, Robbie Grossman as well, but there's no defensive replacement at all.
You would have to do the Robbie Grossman bats for Nicky Lopez, and then you go to Braden Shoemake, who came in the game late for pinch running purposes in the ninth inning. So you would have to do that. It's a little harder, and I wouldn't have removed Nicky Lopez there. He's your leadoff hitter, so let him lead off. And I think he had, what, a 1-for-4 day? Fine. And I know that Jarrett's mad at Vaughn, but if anybody, that's the guy who actually had a decent day with 2-for-4, drove in a run, scored a run. He might be breaking out of his doldrums of this early season. So, yeah, sometimes you're just going to get out. And, yes, that at-bat wasn't great where you need a single or something to move the runner along. So he's a run producer, and I get what you're saying, Jarrett, but sometimes you just don't execute. And I can't be mad at not executing if the plan was right and your process was right. Sometimes the pitcher will beat you.
Yeah, and Sox did get eight hits today. They also had three walks, just weren't able to execute 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. We're going to take a break, and then we'll jump into some more Garrett Crochet stuff. We'll also talk a little bit about the Sox versus Joe Ryan. Want to let you know, though, about our friends over at Chevy. Drive home a winner this April after visiting our partner, Ray Chevrolet. They're sharing the best offers of the year, so make your way over to Ray Chevrolet on Fox at Route 12 in Fox Lake to join in on the savings. As one of the top-selling Chevy dealers in the Midwest, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicagoland's largest Chevy inventories. Plus, you can find the perfect tailgating vehicle. For a limited time, they're offering 0% financing for 72 months on new Silverados with over 100 available. And to top it all off, they're pricing over 125 vehicles under $20,000. Herb, can pricing get more affordable?
I don't think so.
Well, It can.
Because
things can be free. Oh. Get a free oil change at Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake when you mention CHGO. A free oil change. All you need to do is mention CHGO when scheduling your oil change. So head over to Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake or RayChevrolet.com. They've been serving the community since 1963. Find new roads. And we also want to let you know about our friends over at Prize Picks. I wasn't able to hit my play tonight. Joe Ryan, I think, ended up kind of screwing me over. Garrett Crochet got 7Ks, so he had more than, but I took more than on Joe Ryan, and he only had 3 strikeouts. So
White Sox battling.
Hey, look at that. White Sox were able to put balls in play, just not hard enough or missing enough defenders. But want to let you know about Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They're the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you're battling yourself. Pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. I doubted the Sox a little bit, and that screwed me over on my pick. But you know, if you picked right with less than on Joe Ryan strikeouts and more than on Garrett Crochet, you'd be walking home a winner. Spring training is over and baseball season is officially underway, so don't miss your chance to add your favorite players from the diamond into your prize pick entries. Whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs, take your pick of more than or less than and add them to your prize picks entry today. And they are very fun and easy to play. You can get your entries in less than 60 seconds. So go check out the fun at prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. So let's go to the Sox against Joe Ryan. The Sox were able to barrage Joe Ryan early. Lopez got a first pitch hit. Then Andrew Vaughn was able to work a 3-2 count and got a fastball inside that he ended up pulling for a double and scoring Nicky Lopez. And then the next batter up, Gavin Sheets attacks a first pitch fastball for a single. But then we saw a switch up from Joe Ryan. When Aloy came up, he saw a slider, splitter, and then ended up, I think, grounding out into a double play.
Yep.
And then Benny
run scored, though.
Yeah, run scored. And then Benny came up, saw splitter, four-seam splitter, and he ended up grounding out. And it seemed like after that single by Sheets,
yep,
Ryan was able to change up his game plan. The Sox really weren't able to change up their game plan and get to Joe Ryan.
No, not at all. And it looked like he had a concerted effort, like, okay, I see what they're doing. And then right when that hit happened for Gavin Sheets, 104 miles per hour, he's like, yeah, they're seeing me way too well, and they're crushing this first pitch fastball. There must have been a game plan for the Minnesota Twins to get first pitch strike against the White Sox, because they don't really swing at a lot of first pitch strikes. So you got 96.4 off of the bat of Nicky Lopez to start the game. You know, Nicky likes to work these counts, especially since he's been a leadoff hitter, and then you get that rocket by Andrew Vaughn, like 111 miles per hour off the bat. Good battle, 3-2 to Joe Ryan, and got that double. And then, yeah, when he changed up to Eloy, who did not have a great game, the double play right there, struck out two more times, and then Andrew Benintendi with a weak contact to get out of that first inning. I was like, okay, we got Joe Ryan figured out. Like, we got two runs out of the first inning. It's very unusual, especially to start the game, for the White Sox to have two runs in that first inning. So we're good for it, and we're attacking him, and we're doing exactly what our game plan was. So it's good to see that they had a game plan and they attacked it. Now the next phase is keeping the same mentality of having a game plan and then having the adjust there for when Joe Ryan or whatever pitcher inevitably changes his process to stop throwing you first pitch strikes or stop throwing you fastballs in the zone.
Yeah. So the first three first pitch is by Joe Ryan. So the first three batters, Lopez, Vaughn, and Sheets, all saw four-seam fastballs. And then after that, in the next 20 first pitch strikes, there was only three. So he completely changed it up, started going splitter heavy to the lefties, starting off with the slider against righties. It's disappointing just because it seems like when the Twins have a game plan, they're still able to stick into that game plan. As I throw my pen, it's fine. Leave it. Don't eat it. It's fine. It seems like the Twins are still able to stick to their game plan and not be thrown off. The White Sox game plan was really, all right, he's going to throw fastballs first pitch.
Yeah.
Well, then what's your next move, right? Like, you know, Joe Ryan got hit and he had a game plan and learned how to take that hit and deal with it and get through and was able to pitch six innings. The White Sox really just didn't have that answer. I'll give the team credit. Again, eight hits, three walks. It seems like they've been doing a better job of discerning what is a strike and what isn't a strike. It seems like their chase rate's down.
Mm-hmm.
But with the lack of talent on this team, their chase rate is down and their talent's down. So it's just a lack of driving balls, the lack of getting a Carlos Santana home run. You're really just reliant on Gavin Sheets or Aloy Jimenez going deep, and anything else is a cherry on top. And, I mean, there's been several games where you get homers from Pilar and Corey Lee, and you're not able to win. So it's at some point, someone's just got to hit the damn ball. And I guess Vaughn hit the damn ball, but he only did it twice, and he needed him in the eighth inning.
I mean, he scored that one run. The one run, Nicky Lopez, the double was good, but you need more, as you said. More is needed because this White Sox team, for all the fast talk, is pretty much station to station. And as you were talking about, they don't hit home runs. They're 29th in the league, and home runs hit. So to produce runs, they need to produce runs like they did where they're double stealing, where they're doing things where it's a hit and run. Maybe if you want a bunt, do these things for hits instead of sacrifice bunts. They need to find their offense via other ways than the long ball because they're not getting it right now. And after that, you said Joe Ryan adjusted, and he knew that they weren't going to take him deep anymore. They weren't going to hit him hard anymore. And that was pretty much ball game for Joe Ryan in his time that he was pitching versus the White Sox. Now, he didn't strike him out a lot, and that's probably a product of them ambushing him in the front of the game and him adjusting to just, hey, let me just get soft contact because I know these guys are not going to take me deep. And so that's what you have to do. You pitch to the score. You pitch to the team that you're actually playing. That's a good outing right there by Joe Ryan, getting rocked early and then adjusting to what happens later on.
Yeah, and then it sucks the Southside Monday jerseys didn't help him out. First time we've seen the Southside jerseys, the City Connect jerseys, and they look different. Crochet's name was a lot bigger than the other jerseys. I think they snuck out those 2023 versions and put those on. They aren't wearing the new ones.
Who's going to stop them?
not MLB. They threw Nike under the bus.
What are they going to do? Sue them or say, hey, you shouldn't be wearing them? Like, you guys just told Nike they have to change the uniforms. So, yeah, I'm going to wear my old ones. And they look sharp as hell. I like them.
Yeah. We will have some video from Garrett Crochet in a second. We do have some questions in the chat, and then we'll go to some Garrett Crochet talk. Our guy, Victor Von Doom, saying, is Johan Duran injured? I thought he was the closer. Per Do Hoang Park of, I believe, The Athletic. I could be wrong on that. I didn't write that down. Johan Duran is in Chicago and will likely be activated tomorrow. So if you missed his 103-mile-per-hour sinkers and his splinker at 102, Johan Duran will be back. And shout-out to Kevin, too, who said he stopped by The Whistle, our place from opening day last year. They're still talking about us, Herb, because we're so friendly.
Love that place. So nice. And there was somebody else asking a question. Do you guys think that Pedro should have left Kopech in to face Bucks, and that was Chris Gamble? I looked up the stats. John Brebbia, before this, short sample size, had 0-for-2 versus Buxton. Buxton was 0-for-2 versus him with two strikeouts. And I think Michael Kopech was, or Byron Buxton was 3-for-9 versus Kopech with no home runs and just a couple singles and doubles.
Yeah, I don't really want to second guess it too much because Kopech threw 16 pitches and they've talked about wanting him to be more in a normal role. So I'm fine with him going up and facing, right, 1-2-3. I guess, did they end up getting to the fifth guy? Because no, they went 1-2-3.
Yeah,
he got Correa with that nasty K, and went 1-2-3, 16 pitches. But he was going at, it's averaged 100 miles per hour on his fastball. Like, I think they said, get us out of this inning.
Yeah,
I don't think it was, it's much too much. I think it's kind of second guessing there.
And I like how Pedro went with him in the eighth inning when they were going 1-2-3, as you were talking about, Sean. Like, that's the best part of their lineup. They're, you need your best reliever out there, and Kopech was on one today. He topped out at 101, but he was feeling it the whole night long. And like you were talking about with that wicked slider to fit, just freeze Carlos Correa. It's like, man, I just came back from the IL, and this is how you treat me? Filthy. 101 on the black, and then a 92-mile-per-hour slider at front his doors. Knees. Oh, my goodness. Brutal. Just filthy. Like, for all the crap I give Pedro Grifol, today it won't be a lot. I'll be questioning him, and when Vinny comes on with us, I'll be questioning some things. But it won't be more, it won't be like, hey, Pedro had a bad strategic game. I just thought the offense didn't work out today, and I don't think any of it was Pedro's fault necessarily, except for the sacrifice bunt.
And Kevin bringing up middle relief was good. I wonder how much Brebbia has gone in the ninth in his career. They thought of him as a guy that could be high leveraged. He's finished 69 games, nice, in his career. He's also had two saves, so he hasn't really been a closer per types, but this wasn't a save situation.
No.
And the option was either keep Kopech in, which I would have been fine with.
Me
just
too.
Because, hey, I'm fine with him throwing 103. Let's just watch that all day long.
I mean, he's supposed to be more a multi-inning guy anyway, so I have no qualms with him coming back, and I have no qualms with Pedro taking him out.
Well, and then the idea too, I think Brebbia versus Baroa, A, I think it's a pretty first tough welcome to the major leagues kid. Oh, yeah. Go face Byron Buxton. But I think if you're Pedro in that situation, you're likely hoping, at worst, Brebbia keeps the game tied, Sox aren't able to score, and you have a 10th inning. And I think Brioa is a better guy with a ghost runner because he has such nasty stuff and can get swing and misses. So I think that was likely the thought process there, was trust Brebbia in a bigger situation where you're going to face Buxton, and then that way Baroa, even if he has a bad game, you could say, oh, well, it was unearned because that guy starts on second base and it's not really your fault,
yep.
And you're also going for the swing and miss there. So I think it was the right move.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, though, I mean, the eighth inning and ninth inning, they had guys on second base and third base and the ability to score, and they didn't capitalize. I mean, that's the biggest issue.
And I know he struggled today, but getting five outs with the stuff that Brad Keller had is nothing short of a miracle. That man was everywhere, and not everywhere where it needs to be. Power changeup, though, 92, 93. I was like, oh, where was this? I'd never seen this before out of Mr. Keller, but not enough separation for my liking from his four-seam fastball, which is at 95, 96. So he was just everywhere, and that's to be expected because he didn't really have a spring training, and this is his first major league appearance for the White Sox. So while not great, he got outs. He got the five outs. Should have had six if the error wasn't made by Danny Mendick, which is a great play on the front end where he loved it, but then short-armed the throw, and then Vaughn couldn't do the short hop.
Well, and Keller, too, a very interesting guy that has started mostly in his career, 151 games, 114 of those starts back in 2022, 22 games started, 35 games total, and then 2023, 9 games started out of 11 appeared in. I don't really think that this is a big guy that's used to coming out of the bullpen.
No.
So I don't know. I think it was interesting that they really wanted him to get a bullpen appearance.
Yeah.
I know he was supposed to start on Monday, but like in Charlotte, but now where does he fit into the rotation? I think that's going to be an interesting part that we talk with Vinny Duber later on. We're going to take a break. We're going to go to some Garrett Crochet video, and then we'll break down the Big Hooks start against the Minnesota Twins. Keller, too, last year averaged 93 miles per hour on his four-seam fastball, 91 miles per hour on his changeup. So you're right, only a 2-mile-per-hour difference there. But, I mean, he was more of a guy that, you know, threw six pitches. He wasn't a fastball changeup guy. Like, yeah. I would rather him in a starter role where, you know, I'll face lefties with these three pitches and righties with these three pitches. Mm-hmm. Gives you options, I guess, out of a bullpen role, but I would rather see him in a starter role giving us five, but we'll see. Anyways, Herb, you want to let people know about Line and Kugel?
To me, when it's summertime, there's nothing that says summer more than this delicious beer right here, Summer Shandy. Whether you're at the ballpark at Guaranteed Rate at the Lining's Lodge, or you're chilling with your people at a grill out or cookout, that says summer to me. But I know you're also saying to me, Herb, I know that Summer Shandy is good because I've had it, so you don't have to sell me on the Summer Shandy. But what can I drink from Line and Kugel year-round? You know what? I went up to Wisconsin this week, saw the Milwaukee Brewer versus the Yankee. When I was up in the good land, I got me some Lining's original beer. This is one of the beers you can have if you go up to Wisconsin and get it. You can also have, as Sean is holding up right now, a Berry Weiss or a Honey Weiss, which is made with real Wisconsin honey. Juicy Peach, Northwoods Amber, Dark Lager. And like I said, the Honey Weiss is made with real Wisconsin honey from real Wisconsin bees.
I'm glad that you phrased it like that because Vinny likes to say it's made with Wisconsin bees. And that sounds like there's bees in the beer.
No, there is no bees made in the process of Line and Kugel beers. They put that on their stamp of approval.
Bee free.
You know that no beer was made with bees at all. And if you've tried any of their beers, you know it's not made with bees and that they bring the flavor for whatever occasion that you are celebrating. And for over 150 years, Line and Kugel has combined German brewing traditions with Wisconsin innovation. You don't just have to pick one. Line and Kugel popular variety packs come with four flavors to try and enjoy. Flavor life's simple moments with Line and Kugels, the official craft beer of Chicago White Sox. Go to liney.com/CHGO to find delivery options near you. That's LEINIE.com/CHGO. Or pick up Line and Kugel pretty much anywhere that they sell beer. Line and Kugels, flavor the moment. Celebrate responsibly. The Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company, Chippewa Falls.
Yes.
Mercy.
Jacob Breinenkugel.
I always say it like Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company. Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company. Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company.
There you go.
I got it now.
Also want to let you know about our friends over at CD1 Price Cleaners. They have low prices that customers will save over 30% on their dry cleaning bill by switching over to CD1 Price Cleaners. Oh, word. It's just one price, Herb. No matter what it is, whatever type garment it is, even for sports jerseys, CD1 Price Cleaners offers the same one low price. Other cleaners charge a different price for every garment type. Plus, they have upcharges, and you may pay a different price each time you visit, not with our friends over at CD1 Price Cleaners. And CD1 Price Cleaners also offers a fast turnaround. Other cleaners will have your stuff ready in 2 to 4 days. Not with CD1 Price Cleaners. They'll have it either the same day or the next day, and you'll get a text alert when those are ready, and you can go pick them up over at the nearest CD1 Price Cleaners by you. And they offer a wide variety of services like dry cleaning. They'll wash and fold your laundry. They'll wash those pesky, huge blankets and comforters. They'll tailor and alter your clothing, and they offer cleaning of leather goods and area rugs. So go visit chgo.cd1.com. The link is in the description. That's chgo.cdone.com. That link is in the description. And once you're there, you can pick from an in-store coupon or online pickup and delivery coupon options. Thank you to our friends over at CD1 Price Cleaner, chgo.cdone.com. I heard the jingle. That means Vinny Duber is ready and waiting. But before we go to Guaranteed Rate Field, let's go to Guaranteed Rate Field and the video that Vinny shot of Garrett Crochet's post-game press conference. And I will do a little dance, and I will wait.
A little love.
I thought it was
get
ready.
Get down tonight.
My bad.
Get down tonight.
You doing that dance?
I feel like it took me a minute to get going. I feel like giving up the homer kind of flipped the switch for me. And then I felt like I was kind of on autopilot for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it looked like your stuff was playing well.
Yeah. It was tough to give up another homer on that honey hole slider that I've been talking about. Was trying to go back door and just pulled it.
How did it kind of flip the switch for you, said from that point on?
Yeah, definitely. I've been kind of trying to be an even kill guy, but I think internally I was riding that line a little bit too much. I think that there's times when you got to pitch angry as hell. I talked about it in KC, and after the homer happened, you know, it was really locked me back in.
What was the 5-inning, 77 pitches, I think it was. What was the conversation in the dugout about it?
Yeah, I was frustrated just because of the road trip that we just went on. You know, I took part in wearing out the bullpen a good bit. So I felt like today was a good chance for me to save them. You know, I had a long second, but I was able to be efficient after that. And that was kind of what was going on in my mind was, you know, it's time that I do my part and I get through six. So I just really wanted to, but I feel like they're just looking out for my best interest. You know, that was kind of... I was kind of Ethan and Pedro's side. Was just, you know, it's a long season, so let's make sure that we make every start that we can.
Don't you think you could be a little easier on yourself because, you don't learn how to pitch deep into baseball games overnight in major leagues?
Right. It's the major leagues. It's something that I've always expected out of myself. You know, I think it's how everybody feels, you know. Just my past couple outings, you know, I felt like I wasn't hard enough on myself, to be honest. You know, I was giving myself the benefit of the doubt. You know, there were executed pitches that I got burned on, but, you know, I just got to be better as a whole. And that's kind of what happened in the first and second inning. I really wasn't executing. I wasn't getting to my arm side at all, and that was the problem when we were at Minnesota. So once I established that's kind of where the autopilot kicked in, you know. That's where I feel like I started reading swings a little bit better. You know, I was locating the changeup a little bit better. You know, early on, I felt like I was pulling it against the righty hitter. So it was kind of like they were, it was almost like throwing a sweeper to a lefty, like they were kind of bowing out, but because I was front doing the changeup, those are never intentional. So I was just kind of beating myself up about that.
How difficulty that, you know, these measures are kind of preventative for long term, whereas you're feeling pretty good right now, so you feel like you can keep going.
So
is some of the difficulty of, you know, stopping shorter than you want to go, is that it's kind of a preventative measure, whereas you feel good right now?
Right. And, you know, that's how I feel about it as well. It's kind of, in my mind, it's across that bridge when we come to it, but I understand that they're protecting my best interest, so I've just got to have faith in them on that regard. You know, I'm just going to keep pitching until the ball's taken out of my hand. You know, that's all that I can do as a player.
How'd you feel about the changeup overall? It seemed like you used it as much tonight
as you know. I felt really good. You know, the one that I was throwing in spring that I had worked all offseason on kind of just turned to crap. So I started throwing the one that I've thrown in the past back in 21, and I can command it a lot better. And that was the thing. When I threw it in 21, I don't think I gave up a hit on it. So it was like, why'd I ever even switch? I'm not quite sure. So I just started throwing that one again, and it's had good results.
Hey, we're back. That was Garrett Crochet. I did hear the chime, so let's welcome in Vinny Duber as well, our CHGO White Sox beat writer who filmed that video for us. Vin, what was your biggest takeaway from chatting with Garrett Crochet?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's something that we've been asking kind of all year, right? The three of us are like, what's the plan? What are they going to do with this guy who's never thrown a lot of innings in a single season before? How are they going to do it? You're seeing it in action. And Garrett Crochet, in the moment, at least, not too happy about it, right? I mean, this is a guy who's a competitor, who's got the utmost confidence, as we've seen from him since spring training, that he is going to be able to do this starting pitching job and do it well. He's a starting pitcher, and starting pitchers want to go deep into games. They step on the mound every time with the intention of completing seven innings at the bare minimum, if not nine, right? So, a White Sox bullpen that has been used an awful lot lately because, as Garrett mentioned in that clip, the road trip, the 0-7 road trip they had last week didn't go well from a starting pitching standpoint. A lot of bullpen usage. And here he is, 11 straight batters retired after he gives up that home run, and they take him out of the game. He's not even at 80 pitches yet. They take him out of the game. And you saw on the broadcast that he wasn't happy about the decision that was being made. A guy who is like, I feel fine. Let me keep pitching until I don't feel fine anymore. But the White Sox know that when you don't feel fine, it's already too late, in a sense. So they don't want to get to that point. I think Pedro Grifol used kind of the phrasing of like, they don't want to expedite the time where they're going to have to take more severe measures, right? So it's things like this that are going to be that way of kind of limiting his, workload, for lack of a better term. And it doesn't mean that Garrett Crochet has to be happy about it, but certainly after the fact, he acknowledged that it was kind of being done for a reason, for good reason, to keep him healthy and keep him fresh. I guess the good news is, so far, there hasn't really been any discussion that he isn't feeling that good, right? I mean, every time you ask him, he says he feels fine. His body's recovering the way he wants. And so, as James phrased it in the question there, these are kind of preventative moves by the White Sox to make sure that he is able to pitch and pitch like this as deep into this season as he possibly can.
Before Herbie gets to his first question, I just want to set up Crochet's night. 5 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 walk, 7 Ks, and then, as Vinny mentioned, 11 straight retired. His first inning, he threw 15 pitches. Second inning, he threw 25 pitches. Third inning, and he started going on autopilot, 10 pitches. Fourth inning, he had 9 pitches. And then in the fifth inning, he had 18. Still went 1-2-3 and finished at 76 or 77. I have 77. I think Vinny tweeted out 76. The 76-77 range. It's 7. Okay, all right. 77 pitches for Crochet. Feel free to ask.
And we were talking in the pregame, Sean, about how he got pretty roughed up last week versus the Minnesota Twins for 5 runs. And so adjusting firstly to the team and then your next start, you're going out there. It was very good to see that. And I love that he has anger. And the fact that Pedro and the pitching department, all of them, took him out for his own good, I have no qualms with that at all. Even if the White Sox in the next inning where they brought in Brad Keller would have gave it up because Brad didn't have his best stuff, and it's his first start in the major leagues, so he got out of his conundrum in his inning in 2/3. It was very good to see that the White Sox are looking out for his best interest, saw enough from him today, got through 5 innings, and he was pretty dominant. I'm like, one hanging slider, and of course, Carlos Santana is going to take you deep. But what did Pedro say about when it went into replacing Crochet with Brad Keller for his first major league appearance this year and a relief appearance?
Yeah, basically, Pedro said that this was an opportunity to take Garrett out when they did because they wanted to get Keller into the game. They brought him up over the weekend, and I think he's probably not here. I don't think he has been scheduled to start, but it would make sense that he would start maybe in the upcoming series in St. Louis. But I think the idea is they don't want him to go too long, right? That this maybe is a time where he could pitch and then still make that start as scheduled. So Pedro kind of called it a perfect storm, saying that if Brad Keller wasn't in that bullpen to give them a little bit more than just your one inning, right, that they might not have taken Crochet out. That Crochet might have been able to, or might have been asked to, pitch another inning. It's the fact that they wanted to use Keller, that Keller was fresh, and that the schedule lined up the way that it did. That allowed them to make the decision with Garrett, which, I mean, I guess that's a good thing because you're finding and taking advantage of the opportunity to cut back on him when you can, as we were just talking about. But yeah, Brad Keller was put in the game. It sounded like he was going to pitch in this game, unless Garrett had a no hitter going or something. But so Keller was there and available, and they wanted him to pitch. And so there you go. Why not use it?
Just have a little bit more on Keller that I want to follow up on. So Tuesday they'll have Soroka starting. Wednesday they'll have Flexen starting. Then there's the off day on Thursday. Friday right now seems to be open. Saturday with Fetty, and then Sunday with Crochet. Do you think this is more Fetty would move up to that Friday start because there is the day off on Thursday and then Keller would slip to that Saturday? I brought up yesterday, we heard that Clevenger's, you know, expected date was early May, and now we're hitting May come
Wednesday.
Wednesday. Right? Yeah. So is this a spot where Clevenger sneaks in come Friday? Was there much talk about Clevenger at all pregame?
There was no talk. I think everything that you just speculated there could be a possibility. Certainly the way that the White Sox operate, the way that Pedro Grifol answers those questions, I'm guessing that they want to get to the off day and then figure it out. They're going to use the off day to their advantage if they want to, certainly, and give an extra day of rest if they want, or, you know, shrink it, right? And have everybody continue on regular rest with the only the four guys that you mentioned there. But they have Keller, who, you know, would be if he, after pitching tonight, he could very conceivably start a game this weekend. But then you're right, Clevenger is possible as well. So I think that's probably something that might be a little bit up in the air, or at least when it comes to us asking, it will probably remain up in the air until the off day. That'd be my prediction. But no, there was no talk about that specifically before the game today.
I don't know if Pedro went into it, but Sean and I realized, and so did Stoney and all the people at the NBC Sports Chicago, that was a concerted effort by the White Sox to ambush Joe Ryan. He threw first ball fastball, first ball hit by Nicky Lopez, fouled off by Andrew Vaughn, eventually got that double, and then the same thing for Gavin Sheets. Was there a concerted effort by the White Sox to do exactly what they did to produce those two runs in the first inning, and then Joe Ryan kind of readjusted back to the White Sox and pretty much shut him down for the rest of the game?
We always talk about the chess match, right? And these two teams just saw each other, and they're going to see, that Rays team next week that they just saw here too. So when you get some similar pitching matchups, you have the opportunity to do the chess match. You heard Garrett Crochet talking about the team that they just faced last week and the adjustments that he was able to make. We talked about already, and why wouldn't the offense be trying to do the same thing? Now they did it very briefly, right? Because as you mentioned, they didn't do much of anything after the first inning. There were only a few chances for them to score, and most of them came later in the game. Pedro was a little disappointed that they didn't get more in that first inning, even though, you know, it was just by the time Gavin had hit that single, you know, it was a run scoring double play from Eloy. You know, I don't know how many more base runners there would have been, but he was mad that they didn't get more, probably for what you were saying, right? That the game plan was working there, and they were getting to Joe Ryan, and then Eloy, you know, gets the two outs, clears the bases, and it's kind of a chance to reset for Ryan. So, you know, the chess match is ongoing all the time, and they had some success, but they weren't able to replicate that after that first inning.
I think I have one more chess match question, then I can go back to Crochet and his performance today. Did Pedro talk about the decision to go to Brebbia in the ninth? We talked about, hey, do you let Kopech go and face Buxton to start off the ninth? We also kind of felt like it was a little bit of second guessing to bring that up, but we also saw Prelander Barroa warming up in the ninth inning. Was there any discussion from Pedro on why he went to Brebbia over keeping Kopech out for one more batter or bringing in Prelander Barroa?
So we didn't ask about the pitching decisions, more so just pitching to Buxton, right? And he said that, you know, I kind of was getting at Herb what you always ask, and you're always talking about why don't you just walk him every time he comes up there. Pedro used the phrase, he's the leadoff man. There's nowhere to put him, so there's that. But the idea that Brebbia came in, I mean, listen, this is a guy who obviously is paid to be one of their best relievers and supposed to be effective. Corey Lee said he liked the pitch that Brebbia threw, and he just wanted it just – Buxton did a good job of hitting it, which Buxton's done a good job of hitting pitches a lot against the White Sox. But I think if I had to guess, when you look at Kopech and why he maybe didn't stay in, I'd say the score, right? It was a tie game. Obviously, we've seen Pedro use Kopech for multiple innings when the White Sox have had a lead, and try to get that two-inning save that he's had once and I think has tried for a couple other times. But I think here with the idea being that the game was still tied, I'm not sure he wanted to burn his closer necessarily or his best reliever. Obviously, Kopech was very good in his 1-2-3 eighth inning. You would like to imagine that he would be available again tomorrow after going through a weekend and a road trip in which they had to use so many relievers so often, probably keeping the workload to as small as possible with as many of those guys as possible is probably on Pedro's mind. That would be my guess.
No, Pedro was, you said that Pedro was kind of angry that they didn't score more runs in that first inning. But as I said earlier in the show, like, this game, as losses go, is not the worst. Like, they pitched well for the most part. I'm not even mad at Rebia, like you were just talking about. That pitch, you got to give credit to Byron Buxton more there, and then less, you know, blame for Pedro putting in Rebia or Rebia throwing the pitch. But what was the locker room like? Like, I know they're mad after most losses or sad or sullen, but they just came off a good series this weekend where they got some hope. Tommy Pham didn't play today, but I think, you know, this team is a little bit different than the one that, you know, was in Minnesota last week. So is the mood different from what you last were in the clubhouse, even though I know you were in the clubhouse on Friday? Is it different when Tommy Pham's in there?
I wouldn't say it's too different, and I think that kind of speaks to what I wrote about today in the newsletter. I talked to Nicky Lopez last week, and it has seemed to me that, and I know people don't really like to hear this when the team's record is what it is, but it has seemed to me that if you're looking for an area of progress on this team, it can be that clubhouse. I think that this team is vastly more able to, or vastly better built to handle this kind of record than the one from a year ago, right? I mean, we even had Pedro even said to me in an interview, you know, over the last year that the team wasn't able to bounce back from that 8-21 April a year ago, right? That it beat them down. And we talked so often the last 2 years to this team about how nobody was having any fun, and, you know, they needed to find fun where they could find it because it wasn't coming because the losses were so bad. This team isn't acting that way. And yeah, it's obviously very disappointed. They're very disappointed that they're losing and that the record is what it is. But it just seems like this different group of guys that Chris Getz brought in. Go ahead and criticize it for not hitting, for not being as good defensively as you thought it was going to be, for not, you know, having the fundamentals down as well as they were advertised to. But the spirit of this group is different and better, and I think that that is a strength right now. You know, again, it sounds weird to say that when their record is what it is, but if you're looking for progress, if you're upset that you haven't seen progress in some of the areas you were expecting to see progress in, this is an area that I know you guys can't see because you're not in there, but I am telling you from being in there that it is an area. And I think some of the quotes that Nicky Lopez had were really kind of illustrated that. I talked to Andrew Benintendi today. He kind of echoed some of the same thing. These guys are hanging out together. These guys like each other, kind of thing. Like, nobody's kind of going off into their separate corners because they're all mad that things aren't going well. So I don't think I necessarily noticed things being different today versus Friday. You know what I mean? Coming off the three wins versus coming off that horrible road trip. And I think that's probably – that probably speaks to the fact that things were okay on that front. Granted, it doesn't get you any wins, and so people don't have to care about it, but it is something that they focused on, right? That Chris talked about wanting to improve, and it does seem like there has been progress there.
Vinny, what went into, I don't know if Pedro spoke about this before the game, him batting Andrew Vaughn in the two hole, a guy who was hitting 175 before this game started. It worked out. The results were good. 2-for-4, scored a run, drove in a run. Did Pedro speak about that either pre or post game about Andrew Vaughn and maybe trying to get him going by putting him in the two spot?
I mean, he spoke about that in the past. I think we've seen Vaughn in the two hole multiple times. I don't think this was the first time this year that he's been there. But yeah, that is an area, that is a spot in the lineup where it's like, try to get you going, right? I mean, you've got a guy in front of you, presumably the leadoff man who the manager is confident is going to go ahead and get on base. And you saw Nicky Lopez do that in the first inning, providing a chance, providing an opportunity, right? So I think Vaughn has obviously been slow to break out of this funk that he's in to start the year, but that is a part of the strategy that at times can be keep putting guys back in those important spots, not dropping them down to the lineup as like punishment for not doing well, right? At the same time, you got to remember what this lineup looks like right now. There's still no Yoan Moncada. There's still no Luis Robert Jr. And today there was no Tommy Pham, right? He wanted to rest Tommy after a guy who didn't have a spring training, as Pedro put it, ran really hard and played, does everything at 100% over the last 3 days in the major league. So he wanted to give him a bit of a blow today. But, you know, Andrew Vaughn is supposed to be one of the best hitters on this team, or one of the more reliable hitters on this team. And then on top of that, you take Moncada and Robert out of there. he's kind of the guy that you want in that top half of the lineup, even though the results haven't been what they are. So, listen, you didn't see him do anything severe with Andrew Benintendi, and now he's coming around a little bit. Andrew Vaughn is probably getting the same treatment, and I don't think you can, I don't think you can say we're going to take any more radical approaches than that before you've even gotten to May 1st. So I think that you'll continue to see Andrew Vaughn in quote-unquote important spots in this batting order.
Make sure you check out Vinny's White Sox Weekly up at allchgo.com. He also posted an article from today about how Tommy Pham fits into the White Sox outfield and that puzzle that features Rafael Ortega and Andrew Benintendi and Gavin Sheets. Anyone else on the roster going to be thrown out in the outfield that we need to know of? Andrew Vaughn, the return?
I don't think Andrew Vaughn. I think you'd probably have a better chance of seeing Danny Mendick out there. Not that you will, but I think he's played outfield in his big league career, at least an inning or two. But remember the kind of the point of that story was like Robert's going to come back in a couple of weeks, in a few weeks, maybe by mid-May. That's the hope that the White Sox have. What's going to happen then? Question mark, right? They just sent Dominic Fletcher, who was supposed to be their everyday right fielder, down to the minors. Oscar Colas is still down in the minors. There's a lot of wrinkles to the outfield all of a sudden, and it's going to be interesting what it looks like when Robert comes back. It's going to be interesting what it looks like after the trade deadline, right? If the Tommy Pham experiment works out, you'd have to imagine that he won't be here past the beginning of August. But also you got Gavin Sheets continuing to hit well. You know what I mean? Is if his start kind of doesn't slow down, Pedro's going to have a real question on his hand of how to get Robert and Pham and Sheets and Aloy and Vaughn all in the lineup at the same time. So we're going to find out what it looks like. And then, like I said, the guy who you thought was going to be the potential long-term piece in that in right field is playing at Charlotte right now. So there's a lot of things that go into the outfield right now.
I'm just going to throw this out here.
Uh-oh.
Nicky Lopez bats lefty. Tony La Russa is still in the organization.
Okay.
Platoon at second base with Andrew Vaughn and Nicky Lopez? I mean, maybe that's how you get him in the lineup. You know, there's a lefty on the bump, and then you throw him out there at second base. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Hilarious.
I just wanted to talk one more thing about Garrett Crochet. I thought the outing was obviously good. The retiring your last 11 batters will do pretty well for your final score line. I did think it's funny that he said, I got to stop throwing backfoot sliders to righties because they keep getting tanked. And Carlos Santana said, thank you for throwing a backfoot slider. I'm going to tank it. I also thought it was cool to see Crochet's wedding ring necklace. Can't wear that on the mound, I guess, to hold a baseball. I've never tried it. but can't have that on your hands.
So, they make it take put it, it off. On their neck. Yeah, they make you take that off.
They
you,
do?
I've seen pitchers get taken. Other teams tell them, hey, they'll tell that guy to take his ring off. And some people can't get it off because it's so tight.
You can cut the ball. That's why.
No, you can't?
Smart.
Well, yeah. If you have a metal wedding ring on and you dig into the ball, you don't think you could make it do some things that it's not supposed to be doing?
You know, I never thought of being devious with a baseball. You're right.
And just a little
There were guys back in the day that carried nail files in the back of their pocket, Sean. Come on.
It's true. I wasn't alive.
No, Phil Niekro, I think
it was.
He was
a knuckleball. Of course you wanted
to. Yeah, he's like, just try to empty out his pockets, and there's the nail file comes out. But Vinny, just for my edification, it's Yoan Moncada's in Arizona rehabbing. Is Robert with the team right now?
No, Robert's in Arizona with Moncada. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, cool. All right, well, that's good. Hopefully we see him by mid-May. All right, I just had one more thing about Crochet. We talked on pregame about where fastball placement needed to be against Minnesota last time. It was more middle and down. Today it was more middle and up. There was a lot more outside fastballs to these right-handers. Saw a ton of right-handers. We brought up that the tunneling of his forcing fastball and slider works better with outside forcing fastballs rather than inside forcing fastballs, and I think that was effective today. But he only threw 5 sliders, really scrapped the pitch, and we saw a ton of changeups from Garrett Crochet, the most in any of his start, 18 changeups today from Garrett Crochet. That's 23% of his pitches, and it was extremely effective with the four-seam fastball. The four-seam fastball, 23 swings, 9 whiffs. That's a 39% whiff rate and 8 called strikes on that. So the four-seam fastball had a 40% called strike plus whiff rate. That's above major league average. And the changeup, 9 swings, 3 whiffs. That's a 33% whiff rate and 3 called strikes, and that's 33.3%. That's a 33% called strike plus whiff rate on the game, 34% called strike plus whiff rate. So he was fantastic, above major league average. Joey, I think there was one graphic about his stuff. His stuff was good as well. There was no real dip. Fastball of 111 plus, and that's really the thing that matters most. And the changeup graded out well, above average. I think it was 106 on stuff plus, might be 108. I don't know how to read. Could be a 104, but it's still above average changeup that we haven't seen a ton from Garrett. I know that he's been working on that grip. So good outing from Garrett to see. And I think it's, like you noted, Vinny, great to hear that he's not feeling any pain after these starts. So they're trying to manage him. I don't think we have a real plan of what their managing is going to look like, but I think it's mostly by feel and, you know, whatever the eye test is happening with Ethan Katz. Like, it's not a set amount of pitches, right? It's not that he was encroaching on 80 pitches.
Correct. Yeah. And I think the idea is just, you know, days like today, when you can take him out, you maybe just bought him another start down the road, right? And I think, like, that's the idea, is that this is, and I've been saying this for weeks now, I think it's going to be micro, which is kind of hard to say, but like micromanagement, you know, on a micro basis, game to game, inning to inning, rather than a macro, okay, we got this number, and when he hits that number, he's gone. I think the idea is that they want to make sure that he's feeling good first and foremost, but as long as he keeps feeling good, then this is the way to do it. It's to chop off an inning here, chop off two innings there, and all of a sudden you've stockpiled maybe innings that he can throw toward the end of the season, or at least in the second half. So I don't expect him to get shut down at any point the way that they're doing this, but I do expect to have nights like tonight where he's not happy that he has to come out of the game.
Absolutely, and it's just important that he's encroaching on that career high. I mean, he's now at 34 innings pitched this year, and the career high in his major league career is 54. So obviously that's been stretched out, and that was, you know, go sit down, we'll throw you for an inning. But we'll see how his body holds up as he approaches that career high number. Anything else from the ballpark you wanted to share? Did you see a lot of good dogs?
Yeah, they were all on the outfield, obviously, so I didn't get it up close and personal, but they do the little parade around the warning track before the game, and so there were a lot of people stopping. There were some folks in the press box that were watching the parade and being like, uh-oh, don't let them on the grass. Roger's not going to be happy about the dogs being on the grass. So hopefully there were no problems that the sod father needed to deal with.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I think that Byron Buxton, yeah, I'm not even going to make the joke. Anyways, that's going to do it.
Vinny, I actually have a question for you.
It's Joey.
Yes, you know, Joey here, more of a Cubs guy. But so, you know, I'm, you know, learning. So I saw this thing about the campfire milkshake. Is that new or controversial, or what has the reception to that item been?
Do Sean or Herb want to take this one?
Well, no. So the real reason I'm asking is because you have had one, and I'm curious what you would rate it out of 10. That's because I see it, the looks of it, it looks very good, and I might have to venture down to guaranteed rate to try a campfire milkshake soon.
This is not meant in a negative way, but it definitely looks better than like it is. You know what I mean? Like I'm not trying to knock
yes,
the taste
of just,
the milkshake.
It's a visually
like,
appealing.
I have a feeling it was constructed for Instagram. And in that regard, it has been a wild success. Correct.
Commercials too. It's got its own commercial.
Listen, it tastes good. I'm not trying to knock it. It tastes good. Would I rather go to like Portillo's for like a big one in the styrofoam? Yeah, probably.
Margie's Candies. But,
yeah, and you're paying $6. That's 16.
Right.
I just had
right.
to. But, I would be remiss if I didn't ask. So
I appreciate it.
But listen, I don't want to discourage anybody. If you want to come down just to try it, please, by all means, because it is a unique ballpark item.
I mean, Melissa brought it up. She said she didn't regret it. She ended up sharing it with her son. Like, that's fine. My thought was just, you know, it's not a ballpark food. I'm never craving a milkshake at a ballpark.
Hey, man.
I'm always craving a milkshake no matter where I am at all times.
We've gone a long way since Vince Vega complained about a $5 milkshake. Now we're at a $15 milkshake. Inflation is killing us.
Inflation is killing us. Anyways, we will be here tomorrow for a post game of tomorrow's Twins and White Sox game. I believe it's Soroka versus Wood Richardson.
Correct.
Wow, look at my memory. You can follow Vinny at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer, and you can read his latest work up at allchgo.com about Tommy Pham and his chat on White Sox Weekly with Nicky Lopez. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at Eckerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. Thank you to Joey for producing the show, and you can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. We will talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye.
We all silly like the mayor.